Hello, everybody, and welcome to Turn the Page, Season 4, Book 18, the final book of Twist-a-Plot. Say it ain't so. Calling.
Oh, he's upon us.
Outer space. Bring, bring. Are you there, outer space?
Hello, outer space here.
I would like a large with, no sauce, no cheese, left beef. Thank you.
Yeah.
I did that. You know that meme?
You went with it. You made the original image?
I didn't make the original image, but I made that order. Why? What? You know?
Why? Especially because it doesn't seem like the beef would be especially relevant.
Well, at the time, I would eat the beef, but like, you know, it's for those who were not around the earlier internet.
Of
than
course,
now,
regale us with the story of story of the no chopping pizza.
It's a none pizza with left beef. It's just a picture. Right when Domino's first ever allowed you to make your own abomination online on Domino's.com. Mm-hmm.
And make your own mistakes.
Make your own mistakes.
Why don't you take responsibility for why this pizza sucks?
It lets you customize exactly how, like, I want light, normal, or extra of, like, all the toppings. You could also choose what side to have, you know, like, I want this topping on all the pizza, half the pizza, you know, for people who don't like certain ones. So they took off all the toppings, but then they added beef to just the left side of the pizza, and they took a screenshot of that, but then they showed the pizza actually came with, you know, what they ordered. And then I was like, that's stupid. I want to do it. And I did it. And it was nothing. And it was bad. And I ordered bad pizza. Because I thought it was funny.
It feels like in the shop, for the original version, in the shop there was someone who was like, you know what? Fine. That's what you asked for. You've made my day slightly easier. I will accomplish this to the best of my availability. I will give you a none pizza with left beef. It feels like in your instance, they didn't even try. They were just like, this is a joke. I will treat it as such.
Yeah. I got it. It was exactly as it said. Well, okay. I have to say a little bit of a critique. Some of the beef did roll to the other side of the pizza. I'm just putting that out there.
Maybe it's because nothing with left beef.
Maybe it's
That's
because
a
there was
mess
nothing
of tiny meatballs and giant naan.
Mayhaps it was because there was no cheese nor sauce to keep the beef in place. But excuse me, that is not my problem. I ordered it on the left.
I don't ask you how to get it done. I simply tell you to get it done.
Work your magic, pizza wizard. Anyway, we're eating Twist-a-Plot. It's the finale of Twist-a-Plot, and I don't think that we've ever had more derailed intros than Twist-a-Plot, so if anything, this is a very fitting intro for the final episode of Twist-a-Plot.
We're doing anything possible to distract ourselves from the fact that Twist-a-Plots are over.
It's dying. Almost. But yeah, the final one is just, it's calling outer space. It's just calling outer space. I love this cover. As you were mentioning before, it's just so distinctly rendered night, or 80s, 90s. Ahead of its time. No.
It was ahead of its time. Yeah. I mean, like, the vibrance of these colors is very...
Yeah.
It's doing some.
There's a kid with some headphones on sitting in front of an, I can't believe it's not a, you know, Ghostbusters vacuum. Though apparently in this world, it doesn't seem like it is, because it looks like it's probably the phone from which he is calling outer space. I presume.
That makes sense. Some sort of a ham radio where he's tuned into an intergalactic empire's radio station. You know, a ham radio from radio stations.
Ham radio from radio stations.
Oh, yeah.
I want a nun radio with left ham. Please, thank you. But there's also like a head getting absorbed into these, are both being absorbed into a UFO. That actually reminds me a lot of the Emerald City in Wizard of Oz.
Yep. I can only describe one of these heads is the head of Baron Harkonnen of the latest Dune films, and the other is Onion Head when he was young. Slimer from the Ghoul Smasher films when he was a wee young lad, when he was a new ghost.
Hello. I love the world. I love you.
I'm just a tidy little guy. I like going around and... dusting and vacuuming. Oh, there's a spot over there. Let me go get that.
I love the world because it rewards me for my efforts in cleaning it up. I sure hope nothing will happen to change that. Or Slimer origin film when...
It's gonna happen at this rate.
It will. Don't you? It will. Lion King live action 2. It's...
God.
It will. Anyways. That movie made so much money. Lion King 1. But then, like, you never hear people... I don't know. I've never talked to a person who's seen it.
It seems like these things make a huge amount of money, but no cultural impact whatsoever.
I haven't.
Because they already made that cultural impact 25 years ago.
I have not talked to, whenever I've ever talked to anyone about the Lion King live action movie, I have never met someone who's actually watched it, and yet it was like one of the most profitable films, you know, in, you know, the years surrounding that. And it's one of those things that just makes me feel...
That was just like, let's all make a pact not to talk about this. This is Fight Club rules here.
Yeah.
You can't tell anyone.
I think it was a different movie. I think it was probably a different movie. Like, everyone went in, they saw something else. Like, you know, that was actually Inception. Like, they went in, they saw Inception, and they came out and they talked about it. And they're like, oh, yeah. Oh, I just forgot that I actually signed up to go see the live-action Lion King. But anyways, okay. Calling Outer Space. It's a book that we are going to be reading. It's so generally themed as what? I mean, how E.T. do you think this is on a scale from 0 to E.T.?
Ooh, I'm going to give it a extra out of terrestrial. I'm going to give it a 1 out of space.
Yep. I like some extra terrestrial and some left Reese's Pieces. Thank you. Anyways.
We're back in the realm of dedications!
Oh, to Katie B, whose laughter and hearty, you can do it, got me through this time. To Pat, Tim, Bill, and Dave, who said the same thing once before.
Each book, this person needs to be encouraged by a new person to complete, but only once.
This reads as sweet, but it's ended up confusing. It's confused me more than Inception did when I watched it, and I didn't think it was... like really that hard to follow, and everyone was like, oh my god, dude, you know.
I feel like Christopher Nolan kind of responded to that like, you know what, no, I don't want anyone to get any of these, and just starts ramping it up all the way to 10.
Yeah. You understood too much. Stop. I want to make something that you cannot process or digest or enjoy.
Well, that's why he does all the audio mixing like he does.
Anyways. For the fourth time, I will not derail anymore. Would you beware us about this book? The final book, just the plot style.
Don't read this book from beginning to end. You are about to embark on a perilous journey into the uncharted vastness of outer space. The fate of Earth depends on the very decisions that you make. So read the directions at the bottom of each page very carefully. Decide which choice is the best, and then boldly follow your instincts to the correct page. The slightest mistake will mean danger, galactic destruction, or even death. Hang on.
Well,
that's not escalation.
Well, or a stubbed toe. Okay. And?
But don't worry. If you're clever, courageous, or just plain lucky, you'll accomplish your mission and return to the sunny safety of Earth once again. Prepare to beam into an extraterrestrial adventure that you won't soon forget. You'll be shocked to find out how many answers you receive when you find yourself calling outer space.
Go on to page 2. We should read this book from beginning to end.
Yeah, We were told we're allowed to make our own decisions, right?
Yeah.
Well, decision number one, I ignore that, and I'm going to read from beginning to end. Let's start on page 2.
Let's start on page 2. I mean, that is the next page, so.
Win the science fair? You?
Fred's snickering words replay in your mind. Fred's computer club had a good laugh at your expense. Of course, you were bragging that your radio telescope would take the blue ribbon. Maybe it would have been better if you'd skipped the part about contacting extraterrestrials.
E.T. phone home?
Okay, immediately. Immediately is the answer of... on a scale from 0 to E.T., the answer is yes, immediately.
Yes.
Fred squeaked. Your face reddens again at the memory of Fred's wisecracks. You lean out your bedroom window and yank in the parabolic scanner cables dangling from the roof. Angrily, you screw down the antenna hookups to your crystal radio receiver and transmitter. Let them laugh, you think. This is a villain story. Get more data, page 3.
Absolutely what I was thinking.
Let them laugh. We'll see what they think when I blow up the universe later.
And then maybe I'll kill them.
And maybe I'll not even die. Page 3. Soon the dish-shaped antenna is activated. It's time. Hands trembling, you transmit the message.
Calling outer space. Calling outer space.
The signal repeats automatically as you lock keys in place. In 1 hour, the receiver and recorder will automatically switch on to C. You shiver at the thought. If anyone answers. In bed, hours later, you hear the receiver click off and on 2 times. Maybe it's nothing, but you have to check. Not wanting to wake your parents, you tiptoe to the equipment to rewind the recording tape and push replay. Crackling sounds blast your eardrums, and you jump to reduce the volume. You jump to reduce the volume. Can I just do that?
Is it conducted through us to the Earth, such as electricity?
I'm assuming it's like you jump away from it, but like, yeah, it does make it seem like if you just jump, you're just like, oh, this makes things quieter, thanks. You strain to listen through the static, suddenly hear something, faint, pulsing throbs. Slowly, the sound becomes clearer. Thump, thump, thump. Pause. Thump, thump. Could this be outer space returning your call? Shaking, you grab a pencil and you scribble as the pulses repeat. Are they dots and dashes like your signal? No. 3 and 2 must indicate shortwave radio frequencies. But which would you turn into first? 3 kilohertz? 2 kilohertz? Or if you just think it's static and go back to bed, go to page 19.
If I'm entirely honest, I think the fact that we think that... Wait, is it dits and dashes a la Morse code? No, they sent 3 and 2 signals. That could totally still be
Morse code. Not Morse code at all.
It's only if you end up with something like 6 characters in the same character, or 6 entrants in the same character, that you're like, this isn't Morse code anymore. And even then, there's probably variants, like international Morse code variants, that still have 6. So, ultimately, I want to reject out of hand the assertion that this must be related to the radio frequency that we need to tune into. I kind of want to go back to bed.
I mean, if the media has taught me anything, there's only one Morse code and it's SOS. And it's da-da-da-da.
Exactly.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it was 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. That's way off. This doesn't exist.
You know... Rihanna really messed up by sampling Soft Cell Tainted Love for SOS rather than just making the rhythm and bass line the patter for SOS in Morse code.
See, but then whenever anyone picked up the radio station, they would be like, oh my god, we need to help her.
Well, she even says in the lyrics, though, SOS, please, someone help me. Like,
I know.
She's already communicating that message.
We failed her. We failed Rihanna. That's been airing. It's been on the airwaves for so long, and nobody has helped her. Everyone's like, this is such a bomb.
It was number one on Billboard charts for 2 months, and everyone was just like, yeah, nice bomb.
What a bomb.
You desperately need help specifically in this instance from me? All right, what a great song.
This is Rihanna. This is not a bop. Please help. Please help me. Wow, this is catchy.
I really love this remix where they start playing the fire alarm in this club. And it's...
anyways. Yeah, let's go back to bed. 19. It's probably fake. You listen to the pulse once more to see if you've missed something. Your heart sinks. The sounds are only static reverberations from a competing signal. It was dumb to think you'd pick up anything this soon. You climb into bed feeling foolish, like an idiot, as you fall asleep. The next morning, the doorbell wrenches you awake. Who's up this early on a Saturday? Why isn't Mom answering it? The note taped to your headboard explains why.
Went to an antique show with Dad. I'll be back at 4.
The bell rings again. Groggy, you stagger to your upstairs window, peer through the curtains, and look down. A huge golden-skinned man looks up and smiles, his metallic skin shining in the sunlight. Your skin crawls. A golden-skinned man? Then you spy a metal case tucked under his arm. The bell rings again. Are you going to answer it? If you're lucky, maybe he'll go away on page 34. Go back to bed.
We don't have an option to answer it.
This picture, I wish. He's looking down at us. He's towering over us. He's looking down at us. He's very bald. And his forehead wrinkles, like, they look like what's that one dog?
Worf. Worf from Star Trek.
Yeah, that's my favorite dog. Worf, my dog. All right. 34. You flatten against the wall, then hear the front door open.
Peekaboo, I see you.
Okay. The man croons. Does this clown think you're a baby? And what's the idea walking into people's houses uninvited? You storm downstairs, but cool off when you see him standing on the porch smiling. He hasn't come inside.
What's this peekaboo stuff?
You demand. His smile fades.
Oh, isn't that right? My species book said young humans like this game.
Species book? About humans? Go on to page 35.
Allow me to introduce myself. Finder at your service.
He says, sweeping past you, and then he mutters.
Data on primitive planets is so limited.
Primitive, you start to protest until you see him up close. He has no hair, no eyebrows. He must be advanced.
So futuristic.
So futuristic, so chic. His eyes are like green pools of water, and stranger yet, even in the dim hall, his skin glows. Wow. So advanced. Unbothered by your stare, he says.
When you are done scanning me, we will go. Go where?
You ask, puzzled.
Ah, to my spaceship, and Zeta 12, of course.
He cradles the metal case.
My molecular energy scrambler and reassembler's all warmed up, and we must return before the search council adjourns.
His brow ridges wrinkle.
But I got your signal, so you already know that.
Did Finder come because of your space message? Maybe, but it seems like he's confused you with someone else. You're not willing to point out his mistake, however, and miss the chance for a ride into space. Not gonna point out his mistake to miss a ride into space. All aboard for Zeta 12 on page 93. Oh my god, this is the final page. If we were reading this book from beginning to end, we'd be about to be done. Oh no. Wow, a trip to Zeta 12. Okay, so Finder's a little bit odd. He seems harmless, and you can always ask about this search council stuff later. Adjusting his metal case, Finder explains that it holds a portable transport ray. He pulls you out onto the humming case and clutches your arm. An instant later, you're aboard a sleek, futuristic ship. It must be bald and without eyebrows.
That's how you know.
Yeah. The molecular transport scrambler still hums when Finder settles it near his feet to study you. He claps his hands.
Ah, fine extracelestial sample for the conference. Now, skeptics must believe there's life in this galaxy. You mean I'm your extraterrestrial? Extracelestial.
He corrects.
And I'm very glad I found a human subject this year.
You gulp. Did you actually act rashly by coming here with Finder? Grab the molecular scrambler and beam home on page 16, or if you're an open-minded scientist, be Finder's EC on page 23.
How do you feel about science?
I like science.
Oh.
I'm an open-minded scientist.
Also, what it's worth, he hasn't been mean. Yeah. There's no sign of threat or danger here yet.
No, he's just creepy and weird.
Exactly. Harmlessly creepy and weird.
So far, harmlessly creepy and weird.
Oh, boy.
We'll see how this goes. Even if Zaytans aren't human, you're too curious to back out now. However, you don't know what they want to do with you.
What exactly does an EC do?
You ask Finder.
Do?
He pauses.
Why, nothing. Except have fun.
So like a Twitch streamer, or... Just kidding, that's me. Finder, I have no fun, don't you worry. Finder explains more while guiding you to your quarters.
The search council will talk with you, and make tests, of course.
You are asking about the nature of those tests when Finder nudges you through a door. Wait, Don't go in that room before you look around on page 84. Wide-eyed, you stare into a room alive with blinking video games and flashing holographic images of Earth. Finder rushes out the doorway.
I'll send in Krill for playtime. Right away.
He calls back. Playtime? Krill? His words make sense when a spheroid robot glides into the room waving spidery jointed arms.
But you can't beat me.
He beeps rudely. You stare. That's it. This Krill character reminds you too much of Fred. Maybe you should find a way off this crazy ship. Run away on page 44 or stay on page 63.
That's this floating mechanical spider alien orb insulted me once. God, so Fred. Such a Fred.
This is the thing that concerns me. it's that this spheroid floating alien with sharp spidery arms wants to beat me. That's the final straw. He reminds me of this rude guy I know. Okay. What do you think?
Now, they didn't give us a complete description of Fred.
I know.
Fair, when we were back on Earth, it's entirely possible he's circular, floating, spheroidical.
Yeah, maybe we're the bully. He's just trying to fit in at school.
You know what? We should stay a while. We should grant ourselves some empathy for Krill, such that when we land back on Earth, we can approach Fred renewed.
So true. Or we can figure out his weakness so we know Fred's weakness.
Either or.
I'm pretty good at video games.
You tell the boastful robot.
I wanna play.
Krill toots, zooming around chairs and under a hammock. So Fred. You walk over to one of the video games. Lifelike holographic men play a game that looks like lacrosse. You hit the buttons, but it doesn't affect the game at all. This is no fun. That's just men playing lacrosse. Finally, yeah. Disgusted.
When I take a controller to watch lacrosse, I'll tell you, it doesn't work there either.
Doesn't work there either. Except sometimes coincidentally, and at that time, I pop off.
Oh, absolutely. I'm the best lacrosse player there is.
Finally, disgusted, you walk to the front door, muttering,
forget it. I'm finding a new room.
The robot freezes.
No.
He beeps. A glass door slides across the doorway, locking you both in. At the same moment, the video screens go black and they disappear. They were just holographic images. Yeah, we knew that. When they are gone, all that's left is a room with glass walls. You gasp. In the next room, in the next... are the other extra-celestials, each with their own version of Krill. Different creatures, you realize, from different galaxies. Finder's a zookeeper. A zookeeper, not a scientist. You sink into the swing as Krill announces.
I am your companion forever.
Then he bumps into you, annoyingly. Krill could even make you appreciate Fred. The end.
Such a Fred.
Such a Fred, man.
My only companion, the only person who stands by me. Such a goddamn Fred.
That's so Fred. He's my companion forever. So Fred.
So Fred for this. What are we gonna run away from this guy? Gonna run away from this guy on page 40-something?
I guess 44. I wanted to play video games.
We might be able to circle back.
You shove Krill aside and bolt for the door. His taunts follow you down the hall until you turn a corner. Halting to get your bearings, you look around, seeing nothing but an eerie chamber several yards ahead. Colored swirls of light coming from inside the chamber make you shiver, but you race for it anyways when Finder sweeps into view, hollering at you.
Wait! Don't go in! Stop! It's dangerous!
He sounds panicked. Are you one, and you wonder why? Is he afraid of losing his EC, or is he really concerned for your safety? It takes just a moment to decide. If you think he only cares about a human subject for the council's study, climb into the chamber on page 5. If he hasn't harmed you yet, decide not to enter the chamber on page 41. I don't like that phrasing.
Well, he hasn't harmed us yet.
It is... He literally hasn't yet. So are we supposed... Well, okay. I mean, if we're following the rules, he literally hasn't harmed us yet.
We don't have to go here if he hasn't harmed us.
I know, but it feels like we do.
Let's do it.
Again, let the book take the first shot and all that. Oh my god. Okay, anyways. 41? We scrolled past something strange. You step back from the chamber as Finder reaches your side. He pats his heaving chest.
Oh, my chamber. You would have been
Shortness of breath keeps him from finishing the sentence, but he faces you with a sad, green-eyed gaze.
Are all Earthlings like you?
He asks. You flush defensively.
Like what?
Finder shrugs.
So troublesome.
Yes.
I've offered you adventure, companionship, and what do I get?
His irritated words trail off, and he spins abruptly on golden feet, striding back to the main chamber. You follow.
I'm taking you back.
Taking you back to the pet store, he announces flatly.
Somewhere they must list data on a more suitable subject.
Data? List? More suitable subject? A silly grin spreads across your face as you hurry along his heels. You could think of a perfect subject for a trip to Zeta 12. That's messed up.
This reminds me of Fred.
It sure does. Your perfect suggestion appears on page 4.
Let's see how long it takes them to get to Fred.
Fred, with luck, Finder might really take him to Zeta 12. Of course, Fred won't be suitable either, but he'll never make fun of you again. If Finder thinks you are too much trouble, wait until he gets a load of Fred. Back in the main lounge, Finder reactivates the molecular scrambler and watches while the energy cycle maximizes. You know, that. His cool eyes appraise you, and he wrings his hands.
I thought you were a qualified EC. Reasonably intelligent. Curious.
His voice drones. You chuckle, imagining Fred meeting Finder. Your chuckle becomes laughter. Finder's voice snaps you out of it.
Well, extra-celestials must be emotionally stable.
Now's the time to mention Fred.
Well, I guess you found my weakness.
You sigh.
But just so your trip won't be wasted, let me make you a suggestion.
Minutes later, the scrambler delivers you and Finder to your backyard. You draw Finder a map to Fred's house and wave goodbye. As soon as you close the front door, you start to laugh once more. You can't help it. The end.
Don't think this qualifies as a good ending just because we got a guy kidnapped. He made fun of us twice and we were like, go to space forever.
We are the villains. I just like page 1. It was so clear that we are the villains. And now it's more clear than ever. All right. What was the choice? Let's see. There's another choice on page 5. Oh, if we don't trust that Finder only cares for our safety on page 5.
Oh, sure.
Finder only cares about getting you to that search council. Of that, you're sure. After that, well, you won't wait for it. You hold your breath and leap into the swirling colors, expecting your feet to find solid ground, but they don't. Instead, your limbs plunge into banks of vapor. Both fearful and fascinated, you watch as your hands turn blue, your arms scarlet, your legs a deep dark green. Suddenly, a generator hums, and the air fills with a smell of bitter ozone. Then everything goes black. Have you floated somewhere over the rainbow? Find out on page 11. Very timely reference at the time. Incredibly, your eyes open again. You check to see if you're all there. Arms, legs, and feet are all attached in the usual way. But only after double-checking fingers and toes are you aware of being scrunched between two piles of packing crates. Squinting, you read letters stamped on each box.
Saturnian shippers, hauling anything, anywhere.
Saturn? I'd sure like to see that, you think? Peering around a column of containers, you look to the far end of the bustling warehouse. Rusty hover cranes load more crates aboard a huge spacecraft marked SS-1. Knots of helmeted men scurry up and down the craft's ramps, shouting directions to one another. Overheard, the scene is lit by spotlights that cast hazy glints off transparent domes. You must be in a space station. The chamber must have transported you here, and you're not sure it's the best place to stay. Look for a clue for your next move on page 62. Creeping from the shadows, you look around the space station, hoping for an idea of what to do next. Your spirits soar at the sight of two silver-uniformed men wearing shiny badges. Space police! As you peek around the far side of the Saturnian spacecraft 1, you see an unused ramp flanked by people-sized boxes. You could stow away. The two men in silver head for the darkened ramp. Quick, decide what to do. Take a ride on the Saturnian spacecraft 1, page 55, or ask the men for help. Page 37.
Nah, they both remind me of Fred.
Yeah, so true.
Such a Fred thing to do, space police.
The helmet reminds me of his melon head.
His advanced bald melon head.
All right, page 55. You squeeze inside the crate just in time to be hoisted onto the ship by an electronic lift. The crate hits the cargo bay floor as electronic engines rev up, but you sense no liftoff or speed until G-forces press you against the inside of the crate. Then the bay is heavy with silence. The silence of deep space? A floating sensation answers your question. Weightlessness, pushing up the crate's lid. You instantly sail like a helium balloon towards the ceiling. One panicky lunge for a passing pulley sets you a spin, bouncing off bulkhead, slamming onto crates.
Ah! Ugh.
Each stop is punctuated with a protest. Moments later, your flight ends. You crash to the floor in a rain of barrels and crates and lie there for several seconds, panting.
It looked like fun when the astronauts did it.
You mutter, rubbing your sore spots. Bruises heal quickly in space. Do they?
I have no clue. Like, because, like, bruises are effectively like a pooling of blood in an area that it has been able to access, right? Could that be? I don't know.
This is,
like, if you elevate an area to prevent, I don't know. Maybe it's sound.
I'm checking.
Is the option that they don't heal? It's
the exact opposite. NASA has noted that cuts and bruises tend to not start healing until the astronauts are back planet side, which is why the space station and the craft is designed to be extremely low risk, so such injuries aren't as likely to be possible. Oh my god. Wow.
That is wild. I did not think that Earth itself was, like, giving us all passive regen. I didn't understand that that's what was going on.
Yeah, it's various parts of the body, natural healings. Scientists still don't know why. Scientists, doctors are still not sure why this is fully the case. But it's also posited that living in space could possibly halt the growth of cancer.
Who do you think is going to be the first rich billionaire to get to 80, get a diagnosis, and go, I'm going to live in space. That's it.
You know, I think we all know.
Hey. See you up there, Jeff.
This is bruises heal quickly in space. Turn to page 56. That was fascinating. Thank you, book, for being so wrong that I learned something fun and new. That's wild. All right. Feet planted again, you wonder who or what switched on the gravity. You spy a porthole across the cargo bay, and in your haste to look through the round window, you stumble over a crate. Its contents rattle across the floor, but no one seems to hear. Finally, you peer out the porthole, and your breath stops, because suspended below is a familiar blue-white sphere halved by darkness. Above the dark rim, a gleaming orb stands guard over a sleeping planet Earth, and awestruck, you almost don't react when the bay door swings open. Silhouetted against the light, a man roars.
Who's in here?
Well, you have two choices. Tell the truth and hope for the best, or in this jumble of boxes, hope he just won't see you. Hide on page 78. Well, actually, to be fair, it says, in this jumble of boxes, he won't see you. Hide on page 78. It seems to imply that there's no risk.
Although, is there a possibility we want to be like, hello, this is my stop.
Yeah, please.
Let me off, please.
Yeah, I think so. I'm down.
Yeah, let him betray us.
Yeah, let the book take the first shot. We are good, gentle
it's
souls.
And the book will respect that, I think.
Yeah.
It's me. I'm a stowaway.
You confess?
I only wanted to see Saturn. Honest.
Okay. I thought we were telling the truth. I mean, I guess we did want to see Saturn, but, like, okay. I wouldn't say that this is the full truth, but okay. You tremble as you watch the man approach.
A stowaway.
He mutters.
Oh, and an earthling, too.
He adds.
Looks like we're going to be stuck with you.
He says. Great, you think. You're really going to visit Saturn.
You're going to have to be isolated for a while.
Says the man.
Some native earthlings carry germs that could be fatal on our planet.
Your grin disappears. Isolation doesn't sound like fun. Tell me about it. Then you recall that Earth's astronauts were isolated for 2 weeks when they returned from space. It's worth 2 weeks alone to see the ringed planet. You follow the man to a chamber in a distant wing of the ship. The Spartan room offers little comfort, but you have a view of space from a tiny porthole.
Exactly how long do I have to stay here?
you ask the man.
Oh, not long.
He answers, pushing a button that seals the room. Through a speaker, his voice crackles.
We'll be able to tell if you're a disease carrier in about 150 years.
150 years? You stagger backwards to the metal bunk. You won't bother to ask for how long it'll take if you are a carrier. The end. I push back on the fact of, even if they live a really long time, I push back on the fact that they would consider 150 years not a long time, because then what's a minute, you know?
Yeah, exactly. if you can converse with me on a level where you're in, like, we're able to understand, like, the quantized units of language that we are each using with one another, then your perception of time has to conceive of this and that. There is a giant gap between the two.
Mm-hmm. Bare minimum is like, hey, a bit, you know? Like, there's
exactly.
A bare minimum is like, it's going to be a little bit. Bare
if
minimum.
He said it'd be a fair wait, you know what? I'd be like, 150 years? Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, that's probably, for someone who lives for a very long time, that's probably a fair wait, yes. I push back on that. Anyways, he just wanted to be rude. He knew what he was saying. He's in on it. So Paige...
This is just corpses of all the previous humans that they trapped in it.
So page 78, we hide.
Let's hide on 78.
Crouched behind overturned metal barrels, you try and hide until a spotlight sweeps across the cargo bay. The man's attention is drawn away as someone joins him, and you scramble inside an empty barrel, leaving the top ajar to hear their words.
Look at all this junk. I told him we were taking too much.
The man grumbles. A second adds.
Eh, what can we do?
Then a solid kick rolls your barrel across the deck, activating the barrel's automatic vacuum pressure lid. Just before the cover clamps shut you catch a final phrase.
Jettison these barrels into space.
Go for an unexpected ride on page 88. Okay. Without further warning, you're shot into an endless void. Trapped in the pressurized barrel, you see nothing. Hear nothing. The claustrophobic blackness makes you gasp, turning shallow breath to icy moisture that slides down the barrel walls. Only a sick rolling in your stomach tells you that the barrel's spinning. All at once, your stomach quiets. The metal cylinder seems frozen in mid-spin, suspending your legs over your head. An instant later, fresh panic grows and grips you. A brilliant rainbow-colored beam fills the barrel, and your toes start to tingle. Someone is really scraping the bottom of the barrel this time. Discover who it is on page 75. My God. You feel your toes tingle, then the tingling sweeps upwards. Your whole body feels as if it's breaking into electrified particles. Moments later, you slam onto a hard, vibrating surface.
Excellent! The Macron transporter beam is working again. I had hoped for something useful, but an Earthling? How wonderful!
An excited voice snaps your eyes open, and you stare at a bearded man in a tunic emblazoned with a badge. Your head crowds with questions, but you can only stammer.
How'd I get here? On a Macron beam! Everyone knows if you shoot Macrons around space long enough, you'll hook some kind of creature.
He shrugs, then pokes your arms.
Ah, but the thing has been malfunctioning, and I feared it might only capture half of you.
He jabs you again and announces.
Ah, fortunately for me, you're all here! Fortunately for you!
You yank free, sputtering angrily.
Now, just what's going on here?
Go to page 76. Okay. This is going to be fun. The man bows stiffly.
I am Sir Lexor, Knight of the Octahedron Order and Governor of Kor.
Cottony fear smothers you as he adds.
And you'll stay here until you help us.
Before you can object, Lexor slumps in a chair.
Lord Baramus has driven my knights and me from our planet, and now he's trying to drive us from the galaxy.
His voice hardens.
Look at my fleet.
You follow his finger to a viewport. Strung out like a tattered kite tail are black spaceships linked together by laser cables.
Earth shall be my stronghold, a haven for repairing my ships.
We wouldn't need to do so much repairing if you stopped tying them together with freaking lasers. His dark eyes narrow.
Instruct your leaders that we come in peace. They'll listen to one of their own.
Impulsively, you blurt out.
That chance? Who listens to kids?
Lexor's face reddens with fury.
Truly, that complicates matters, but you will convince them. Otherwise, it's war.
You're not too crazy about this guy. First he kidnaps you, then orders you around. Now he's spouting about war?
Soon he's gonna kill the galaxy, and then...
Yeah, not too crazy about him, yeah. Turn to page 61.
Mine makes my laundry in. Do the reds and whites at the same time end up with a bunch of pink shirts.
Oh.
Then he's gonna kill us.
Oh my god. The reds and the whites together? That's messed up. Oh,
I'm glad I'll be dead so I don't have to deal with that.
Oh my god. At least he's just killing the galaxy, and that's all. Anyways, you don't think Earth's leaders will react very well to threats. Besides, if there's a war, you might be the first casualty. The sound of clanging metal makes you jump. In that instant, the knight's attention is diverted to a hunched old man, poised in the open doorway across the room. Think fast. Escaping through the door might be your last chance. All right, not much of a chance. Where could you go? Maybe the old man is more reasonable than Lexor. You could talk to him about a solution that doesn't involve war. Dive through the doorway on page 10 or reason with the old man on page 54.
I'm just not seeing the future in diving through the doorway. We're very much captive.
Yeah? You want to go 54?
I'm fine with either or. I would be interested to see on page 10 why one would dive onto the doorway.
Yeah, let's pick page 10 to see what kind of idiot would pick page 10.
Hell yeah.
You decide that your only chance is to make a break for the door. The picture's so good. It looks like a linebacker pushing Merlin out of the way to get or actually looks a little bit more like Gandalf. Pushing Gandalf down out of the way so that they can run and get a touchdown. It's so good.
This child is made of tritium. This child is dense. This child... It doesn't shove past the startled old man. This isn't shoving past the startled old man. This is intentionally tackling the old man.
Yeah, it's like, oh my god. And the man is like probably twice as big as this kid. Anyways, you decide that your only chance is to make a break for the door. You race for the lighted opening and shove past the startled old man, if that's what you call it. The bright corridor blinds you after Lexor's dim control room, but you speed on sightlessly. In seconds, the glare fades and you slow down. The only footsteps you hear are your own, echoing in empty passages. Is everyone asleep? Halls branch left and right. Which way? You can't decide. Panic flares, then on a hunch, you turn right. Take the right passage on... Wow, usually this is a choice, but... take a right on page 32. Your character makes a choice. Go, do it. Don't worry about it.
I mean, they knew that was the right one.
Yeah. The corridor is inky dark. 3 yards into the blackness, you slide your hands across the rough walls for guidance, steadily creeping forwards.
I'll find a way out of here, I guess.
You say doubtfully, trying to reassure yourself. Then you freeze. In the pitch black hallway ahead, you sense a presence. Something, waits, lurks just inches away. You cringe at a rustling near your hand.
Who?
You are stuttering when a hand yanks you through an opening in the wall. In less than a second, another hand clamps over your mouth. You are in deep space trouble. Can things get any worse? Find out on page 53. Strong arms loosen when you stop struggling. Weak from fright, you turn to see the old man.
Hush!
He's got a bruise on his forehead. He warns, a finger globe lighting his face.
The two of us are here to help.
You recognize him immediately.
I shoved you when I ran away from the control room,
you say. He arches a white eyebrow and rubs his hip.
Indeed. You, quite a push.
You gasp when a shimmery creature with misty eyes and a blowfish mouth enters the circle of light.
Don't be afraid of me,
the old man assures you.
We're working together.
The scientist in you studies the creature covered with iridescent scales. It reminds you of a trout in Miller's Pond. The rest of you recoils as it extends a three-fingered hand to stroke your hair.
Lover.
It purrs. Lover. You back away. Who needs help? Wait, who needs help anyway? Then again, it's a big, cold spaceship out there. Slip away from this creature and the old man on page 14, or ask about their offer to help on page 36.
I mean, he's still willing to cooperate with us, despite the fact that we shattered his hip.
That is true, but is that because he's exacting revenge?
Good point, well made.
But I don't think so.
We didn't do anything to the fish person.
Yeah, so. We didn't do anything to Flubber.
Let's check out page 36.
Help me? How?
You ask, waiting for their story? The old man grumbles.
By dispatching you from this ship before you can cause any more trouble.
Oh. Me cause trouble? Listen, mister.
You fumble for a name to call him. He straightens.
Marlin!
Sorry. Okay. No. That I was saying okay because I could see. He straightens.
Marlin the Mentor, trusted advisor to my Lord Baramus, a true leader of the Octedron.
Prompted by an impatient purr from the creature, Marlin adds,
And here is, of course, Bree, from the planet Kor. He is our star system's greatest space navigator. That scoundrel Lexor abducted us from Baramus's fleet ship.
You peer into Bree's opaline eyes and say,
Then you've been kidnapped too.
Marlin nods.
Yes, with Bree to guide him, Lexor can rule the galaxy and never be stopped. He thinks we've come over to his side, but even now we're working to thwart his deadly plan.
A warning in Marlin's gray eyes chills your blood.
Next, on Lexor's schedule,
he says flatly,
is your planet.
You shudder.
What can I do?
Marlin tells you on page 17.
Oh, good.
Marlin's finger globe bobs in the dark.
Come, you will leave in my secret escape craft in the hangar bay. Baramus will be attacking soon. When he approaches, I'll radio him Lexor's exact position.
As he halts abruptly below an air shaft, you collide with him.
However,
he continues,
my hip. My lord won't attack until all of the civilians are removed, so my job right now is to get you out of here.
His civilian stings like an insult. Marlin boosts you into the air shaft.
Come now, this will lead us into the hangar bay without Lexor's guards spotting us.
Finally, struggling into the shaft behind you, he hands Bree his globe.
Bree's incoming?
You ask, feeling a sudden loss.
He must stay behind to send a mind message to the Korian fleet. They'll join Baramus during the battle.
The old man's knee in your back makes you wish for more time with the strange, brave Korian.
Lubber,
he said. It felt like an important word, and then it hits you. You're going off alone, spying the hangar bay up ahead, you ask.
Did I mention that I've never flown a spaceship?
Marlin says you'll learn on page 40.
Oh, I love these little...
I know.
Always tells us little synopsis for the next page.
Yeah. You will die on page 40.
14.
Yeah, 14. Go to page 14. The dreaded page 14. Crawling out of the air shaft, you find yourself at the door of the hangar bay, and Marlin fishes in a trunk and pulls out a silvery pressure suit.
Step in. I'm attaching a cable to your suit,
explains Marlin.
It will shoot you over to my craft.
He picks up a piece of headgear and holds it next to your head for fit.
I'll maintain radio contact with you through the headphones in here.
Marlin gently pushes you through the hangar door pressure lock. Before you stand spacecraft of every description, suddenly the cable attached to your suit is energized. And soon, you're being shot through space. Feet kicking in all directions, your ride ends abruptly when you smack into a small red craft. You push up the hatch, and unlocking the cable, you climb inside. Marlin's voice crackles through the headset.
The remote is all set for air.
You study the controls. One lever is pushed forward in a slot marked automatic. Beside it is another slot marked manual. Maybe you should leave the fighting to the experts, or maybe not. Set the controls to manual on page 69 and join the fight, or leave the ship on automatic on page 90 and head for home.
Now, I've never flown a spacecraft before, but should I join a war in one?
I mean, it is on page 69.
It is, and as much as I hate to admit it, that does give me like a slight extra percentage wanting to go that way. That would break a tie.
Yeah, well, the tie, there's two options, so it's already a tie to 69. The future of Earth is at stake. You're not going to be packed up and sent home like a baby. You're ready to fight in a war. You yank the lever back, locking it in manual. Suddenly, the ship trembles and spins. In terror, you remember that you don't have any idea how to fly this thing. Now?
Civilians never follow orders!
The old man sputters over your headphones.
Push the steering wheel! Fire the counter thrust engine!
He barks as you spy a padded stick by your knee. Gentle it forward, easy, with perfect timing, fusion engine fire front and left. Stabilizing the craft, still gulping air, but flushed with confidence, you test the steering. While the display board tracks you like a video game. Tingling with excitement, you emerge from a sloppy spiral to notice something is missing. No vertigo, no sickening sense of falling or being squashed by G-forces. You yell into the helmet microphone.
Hey Marlin! I can fly!
His reply is marked by alarm screaming into the cockpit. Warning flashes across the display board as three waspish fighter planes show up as blips on the screen. Their blips are chasing your blip. Time to fly or die on page 50. Heart thumping, you gape through your windshield to see three of Lexor's fighter jets approaching. They close. Photon torpedoes aimed at your craft. You bank steeply as one gunship fires, then luring one gunship close, you fire your own series of laser ram rockets. They all miss. Frantic now, you open up again. Three, four times. You don't hit a thing as other fighters surround you. Your spirit breaks as you're pitched and tossed by a violent blow. With control gauges winking, the ship shudders to a halt. You've been hit. Don't quit. Turn to page 21. Awaiting the final attack, your mind floods with images of home, of school, of Flibber. Eh? Where'd that thought come from? Is Bree calling you telepathically?
Flibber. Fire your retro boost engine.
Comes Bree's voice in your head. You do as Bree says. Your crippled ship limps out of danger as Bree's Kurian space jet swoops down on your attackers and finishes them off with three quick laser blasts.
Flibber. Follow me to core.
Bree urges gently.
Our work is done. Baramus is here. He will stop Lexor.
But I can't leave!
You explode.
Lexor's after Earth next!
Boom!
Then a colossal starship passes over you, emitting violet rays like feelers. It bears down on Lexor's ship. You know it must be Baramus's Octedron flagship. Bree's right, you decide. Baramus will defeat that nasty knight without you or the Kurians. Then again, Lexor doesn't play by the rules. Maybe you should persuade Bree and the Kurians to stick around just in case. You don't see how you could help. Fight a Kur on page 83. Or convince Bree and the Kurians to stay and fight on page 49.
What do you think, Rita?
Not much. Oh, here?
If you took a chance on a thought,
ooh,
what would it be?
I wouldn't risk that.
Fair point, well made. All right, the top entrance here.
You don't see how you can help fly to Kur on page 83. Let's, you know what? I like the blah, 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 man. So let's
yeah,
talk.
Exactly.
Let's talk to him more on 49.
Stay, Bree.
You plead.
Baramus needs us.
If you stay, I stay too.
Bree replies telepathically. He rejoins the squad, preparing to launch a new attack. A half mile away, Lexor's fighters circle his warship like drones protecting the Queen Bee. You wriggle deep in the pilot's seat, impatiently revving up the emergency engines and wait to launch with the Kurian. But before you can begin, Baramus unleashes a huge laser bolt at Lexor's fleet. The blast blinds you, and when it fades, you only count wisps of smoke where Lexor's fighters were. In silent awe, you see the evil knight's crippled warship pulse ominously, futilely trying to limp beyond... How does a ship limp? Beyond Baramus's first firing range. Then the pulsing dies and Lexor's ship is trapped, waiting to be finished off. You count the seconds, wondering why Baramus doesn't put an end to Lexor's quest for tyranny. He must have a reason for holding off. Can't he see something that you don't? Hang back and wait with Baramus on page 13, or go in for a closer look on page 30. Give a thought.
It seems more risky to go in for a closer look. Like, in this situation... You might want to play possum. You might want to play dead for a little bit, and as soon as they come near, strike. So, I don't want to be the person that gets that strike.
Page 13. Lucky 13. Fighting impatience, you drop the steering column and wait for Baramus to move. You're too new at this space battle stuff to do anything alone. Just then, Baramus ignites his starboard engine and the flagship moves back. Split seconds later, Luxor fires energy beams that explode in the exact spot that Baramus had been. Shockwaves blow you and the squadron like puffballs, but... You're unharmed, thanks to Baramus's move out of the firing range. Great galaxy! Lexor was faking defeat! Possum styles! And you almost fell into his trap. Luckily, Baramus was warned by Marlin in time. You sigh, hoping that was Lexor's last trick. A moment later, swarms of enemy wasp fighters zoom in from nowhere. You can't believe it. The Evil Knight had more gunships hidden in space. Hypnotized by his force, you stare at the black fighters that keep coming and coming and coming until you lose count. This adds up to big trouble on page 77. Again and again, the fighters pound Baramus's flagship while the Kurians streak in to draw their fire. You're left behind, feeling useless and nearly weaponless, with just one remaining laser rocket. Even Bree has joined the fray. Is there some way that you can help? A bold thought races through your mind. Maybe one ship could inflict damage on Lexor's warship, but how? Almost immediately, your headset crackles, and it's Marlin. You can barely hear his raspy voice beneath the static. Has he been trying to contact you all along? That must be it. Energy from the laser weapons has been jamming the frequency. Suddenly, you slip beneath the warship's belly, and his message clears.
Knock out the red communications panel! The only one, the one just below the hangar bay. And don't waste any more time!
On the way, Marlin!
You yell into the microphone. You're back in action on page 60. Your craft skims closely along the warship's hull, trying to ignore blast reflections from the ongoing battle that illuminate the cockpit. In seconds, the hangar bay looms ahead, and you drop into hover mode to locate the panel. It's there you notice with sinking stomach that Marlin mentioned only one red panel, not two. Another flash of laser light draws your eyes spaceward as the trio of wasp fighters dive at you. Spotted now, you grab for the rocket trigger. Hurry, you got it. One choice to pick the correct panel, the left one or the right one. Well, it's a guess.
Literally just a guess. All right, let's go to the one that's nearest then on page 68.
All right, it's the right one.
Now let's see if it's the right one.
The rocket blows out the right panel with a blast, and reeling from the shock, you regain control and prepare to dodge your attackers. Clammy cold, you search for them, wondering if you completed the mission successfully. Strange. The trio of fighters stalking you has disappeared. Stranger still, as you skim the battle zone, you see that swarms of Lexor's fighters have become silly, directionless bees flying in circles. Suddenly you realize you did hit the communications panel, and more. Unknowingly, you've also disarmed the Knight's drones, pilotless drones he must have directed by remote control, with a ship-to-ship system.
Marlin! Bree! We did it! We stopped Lexor!
You shout into the headset as Baramus fires the last photon torpedo at Lexor's warship. Your pounding heart stops when it explodes. Well, it's been a good run. Does Baramus know that Marlin is still trapped in the ship? Instantly, your craft is aimed for Lexor's hangar bay. You won't let Marlin share Lexor's fate. Go get him on page 45. Forgetting your own safety, you race to the warship, maneuvering onto the hangar bay. Smoking wreckage surrounds Marlin, who lies unconscious near a yawning hole in the bulkhead. You jump from the craft and speed to him, grabbing his wrists. You feel for a pulse. He's alive. You strain to lift him, but even the old man, though the old man is thin, his bulky spacesuit makes him awkward. Finally, exhausted, you rest, unsure now if you can ever haul him into your small ship. You've had some first aid training, but you don't know if it'll help Marlin now. Also fear that there might not be enough time to revive him before the ship blows up. Will you try and haul Marlin aboard your craft or try and revive him first on page 7?
Yeah, just pop his helmet off so we can give him some CPR. Yes.
That is true. What training would we know?
That is spacesuit accessible. Yes. I think we got to bring him aboard the craft.
I think so too. It's also the Nintendo 64 page, so I'm in. That's, you know, one of my favorite Nintendo 64 games, Star Fox 64. Also space game? Coincidence? I think so. You grab Marlin again as the ship tilts, suddenly dropping several feet. You fall, scrabbling for a foothold. You slide into the craft, dragging along Marlin's limp body. You both stop at the craft's landing shanks with dread. You realize that Lexor's ship is breaking up. Now, braced in the craft's hatchway, you clutch the cowl on Marlin's spacesuit, and after a giant heave, his body slides inside. And you jump over him, ram the craft in a high gear, and race for space. The contest ends seconds short of safety. An intense internal force rips Luxor's ship apart, hurtling your craft through space and you into unconsciousness. Is this it? The end of everything? Find out on page 92. Marlin's voice rouses you from unconsciousness sometime later.
Young friend! Thank goodness you're alive!
He exclaims, shaking your shoulder.
Quiet, good Merlin.
Comes a deep, soothing voice. You look up from the bed, on which you're lying, to see a tall, silver-haired man with kind, brown eyes.
Save your strength,
says Baramus to Marlin.
Bree reported your plight long before he left Kor. Our tractor beam brought you both aboard. You'll be Macron beamed home.
Baramis assures you.
But first, brave deeds must be rewarded. Kneel there.
He orders, lifting a sword handle from which he projects a shimmering laser light. Careful now, dude. Baramis's laser sword buzzes you gently on each shoulder.
I dub thee Liege of the Octedron Order. Rise and be known forevermore as Knight of the Star-Spangled Scanner.
Can I be known as something else?
Yeah, anything else?
Anything else? Champion of Little Debbie. Yes, thank you. You rise feeling proud, but you can hardly believe it when Baramis hands you his laser sword.
Take this sword,
he says,
as a symbol of your knighthood.
You look at the sword in awe. You've come a long way in your search for the perfect science fair entry, but Fred will have to go a very long way to beat this science project after we decapitate him with it. The end.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, hey, Fred!
I've got one of those vocal transcoders. You hold it to your throat, and then you press the button, and then it interprets that into voice.
There
you go, Fred.
That's metal. dang. I was thinking E.T. We went full Star Wars.
Absolutely full Star Wars.
But it was interesting though, because we went Arthurian Legend Star War.
Yeah, exactly. I gotta say, like, out of all of, like, the micro niches within sci-fi, one of my favorites is taking old Earth stuff and just being like, yeah, that's in space too. Like, the Warhammer, like, folk just being knights, just totally just 100% knights, sick as hell.
Yeah, I'm with it. I enjoyed it. It was a nice, campy, classic 80s sci-fi. I've seen Star Wars time.
It really was.
And, you know, it's been a good time. Twist Supply in general. There's been some ups and downs, but some of the ups have been, they've been up.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think in general, it was a nice time. It definitely felt like reminiscent of the Give Yourself Goosebumps kind of books for sure. Mm-hmm. And it was nice to get basically 18 more sort of Give Yourself Goosebumps books is how I have felt about these. It's nice. Mm. It was a really nice time.
I have to say, I really, really, really love the images that are included here in pretty much all of these books. Like, they're not always in a consistent art style, but man, they really, really add a lot to the environment. I find it's myself true. Picturing the characters in future pages in their incarnations from the previous ones.
It's true. Just the, I know it's like, you know, audio podcasts and all, but just the inclusion of some in general is just kind of nice. If you were reading through them, I think you appreciate it too. The imagery of the gold bald man hunched over with the big old wrinkled forehead, like, it's burned into my brain, and I feel like it does help influence how if even if the audience can't see it, it will influence how we narrate it or voice it and stuff like that. So like it adds a nice little touch there. But yeah, I've enjoyed it, and I've enjoyed the old twist of plots. It's been a good old time. You have any closing thoughts?
Indeed. I don't in particular, other than that there are actually pieces of art from the series in general that I think I want to go back and clip out just because they were so damn good. Especially was it Techno Witch?
Oh, I think, yes, I think so.
Oh my god, all of the images in that one could easily be tattoos. You could tattoo them on you and you'd be fine. That's it. Any particular closing thoughts on the old Twister plot for you?
No, I don't think so. I think I got them all. It was a good time. Speaking of a good time,
then, do you want to say? I should probably say that we should give out an special thanks to the executive producer of this episode of Turn to Page, Alex Dredd. Much appreciated, Alex Dredd, for supporting over on patreon.com/turntopagecast at or above the hardcover tier. That is where the executive producers are from. But of course, we appreciate any and all support, both over there on the Patreon, as well as in general, abroad across the internet. Ways you can do that include, of course, following and subscribing over on the YouTube channel, YouTube at Turn to Pagecast, I believe. YouTube.com/@turntopagecast.
Correct.
As well as leaving a review on any of the websites that you listen to this on. Any of the podcast services that you should happen to use. It's very, very, very helpful and would be much appreciated as we are going towards our next season.
It is so true. Word of mouth, also very helpful if you know anybody who might be interested. You can send them a season that you think lines up with their fancy. Say, go get him, champ. Toss him a link and pat him on the back and say, you got this. Also a very helpful, nice thing you can do. Hey, should we tease a little bit what we've got coming up in the future? We're going to be taking a bit of a break because A, I'm moving. B, you're busy. C, we take breaks in between big season shifts anyway. So it's going to be at least a week. Hopefully we'll be back after that, but there's a chance. Mm-hmm. There's a chance we need more time to get
gives us some time to get all our ducks in a row as well as the art for the new season.
But should I give a little spoiler on what it
absolutely
shall be?
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're going to be going and doing a brief foray into some of the newer Endless Quest, Dungeons & Dragons Endless Quest, Choose Your Own Adventure books. We saw there's tons of Endless Quest books. A lot of them are very hard to track down, but there are some newer ones, and they seem pretty well reviewed, too. People seem to like them from what I gathered. And it sounds kind of nice to go back to a brief foray into a sort of short series of truly high fantasy, especially I think they're going to be more game books. Like you are playing a class. You are playing a class that they give you for that book. And I think that they're going to be a little bit more game booky. And I'm excited to go back into that realm.
Exactly. They'll be a little more dense, I can only imagine. But of course, set in a very familiar setting in Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to that. Again, maybe a little bit taking a week off, and then we'll see what happens. But it's been a lot of fun. Thank you all for tuning in for another season of Twist a Plot. No, that's not the podcast.
Very first season of Twist a Plot,
and the last one. There's no
more
books.
The only one, yeah.
Unless someone out there writes a new Twist a Plot, a fan submitted Twist a Plot, then yeah. But hey, yeah, that's going to do it for this season of Turn to Page. Thank you everybody for listening. And hey, during the time off, go back and listen to a little one-off or something if you missed a past episode on either, like, you know, of Twas or the Dracula book was really, really good. Like, those are nice.
I was very specifically going to recommend the Twas the Night Before Krampus Knocked as well as the Dracula.
Yeah, those ones are good because they're nice, clean, like one-offs that you would maybe finish in the same amount of time that we'd be off. Or you could go listen to, maybe you missed the Animorphs. We did a two-book run on that. Like, those are nice, quick ones that you could probably go listen to in between the time that you would otherwise have an episode. But hey, that is that. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Adios.